Simplifying Analytics, your one-stop podcast for data science, big data, descriptive, predictive, and cognitive analytics. Welcome.
Vamos a ver una disrupción importante en los próximos 24 meses. 2 a 5 años máximo, porque la tecnología se está moviendo tremendamente rápida. Hola a todos, bienvenidos a un episodio más de Simplifying Analytics. Mi nombre es Miguel Molina, yo soy CEO de Analyticus y el día de hoy tenemos el privilegio de tener una charla con Bárbara Bobby Kurshan. Bárbara hablará un poco de sus inicios. Ella pues es quizá una de las personas dentro de la industria de EdTech con más influencia, yo les diría, en las últimas décadas. Les invito a que vean su perfil de LinkedIn. Es bastante impresionante la carrera que ha tenido. Y en muy pocos minutos logramos destilar algunas ideas clave sobre cómo ve el futuro de la educación en esa colisión con la tecnología y en particular con la inteligencia artificial. Estoy seguro que disfrutarán muchísimo de este episodio. Por favor, todas las preguntas que tengan o si hay alguien, algún influencer que tengan en el radar y que consideren que debería de ser uno de los invitados en nuestro podcast, déjenos un mensajito. Muchas gracias. Comenzamos.
Bobby, welcome to our episode on Simplifying Analytics. Happy of having you here as a guest.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I know that it'll be an enjoyable conversation.
We're missing the wine because we're doing this virtually, but right, maybe next time we'll do another episode. Bobby, before we start, and even though we're going to share your LinkedIn profile in the notes, could you share a little bit of your trajectory and how you became an EdTech influencer expert? And you've been participating. I was looking at your profile in so many board of directors in the educational and technological space.
Well, thank you for asking that question. As you know, I'm big on writing and talking about journey stories. And in my new book, Innovate Hers, we do explore the journey stories of women that have risen to the top. So my journey story is kind of a long route to where we are today, with a lot of similar activities and things that made me interested in this field. I started looking at the impact of educational technology on children and learners at a very early point in the EdTech industry. So much so that when I was working on my master's and doctorate, the dean of the Graduate School of Education said, "Bobby, you can't write your dissertation on how children learn using computers because we're going to never use computers in schools." Well, of course, that made me even more intent upon writing about this and working on it. So when I first graduated with a mathematics degree with a bachelor's degree in mathematics, I went to work as a programmer. That's what you did. And this was very early. There weren't a lot of women in the field. And I worked for a power company programming for engineers. And that time engineers didn't do their own coding. They would give you the problem and then turn it over to a big room full of programmers, and you'd write in this language that was, you know, very complicated, not easy to understand if you didn't have some background. And my mentor at the time was a wonderful engineer who helped me understand the way to solve problems and use coding more than just writing the coding, so I could take code that was, you know, 50 lines and reduce it to 10 lines, that kind of thing. So he was a wonderful mentor, but I realized I was never going to sit in an office and code. So I decided that I would go back to the university and get my master's and doctorate degree in computer science and instructional design. And when I got out, I became a professor. That's what you did if you had a doctorate. So I was a university professor and ran academic computing at Virginia Tech and then at a women's college called Hollins College for about 11 years. And I helped engage women in learning about technology. I created the first degree in computer science at the women's college and was able to convince Digital Computers that they should give me some of their very first new mini computers. And they gave me two, and it was a wonderful experience, and we were lucky to get them at that very early stage. And then I decided that being a university professor was probably not the way I was going to impact kids. So I left the university and began to design educational children's software, which is what my passion was, and not just for K through 12 children, but universities and learners and adult learning. And I created the first products for Apple for education. I created the first two children's products for Microsoft, and then went on to be approached by a group of people that were investing, a private equity group that was investing in education. And the banker came to me and said, look, we need the research analyst. Would you come onto our team and tell us everything you know about education, and we'll teach you everything we know about investment banking. So it was a great journey. I really enjoy it. And I've sort of stayed on that path for a while. And then I was hired by Scott McNally from Sun Microsystems to run his nonprofit on open source education. So we built the first largest OER database called Kariki for learners, and then went on to go back to the University of Pennsylvania, where I still hold a position. And I basically got involved in entrepreneurship and technology and education, and created their first master's program in the field, and jointly with Wharton, created a business plan competition that grew to give away over $150,000 a year. And then have since then gone on to teach their certificate in innovation and entrepreneurship. So my journey, while it has the same theme through it around technology and the impact on learning, it's changed the roles I've had over the years. And it's given me a perspective that now what I do is teach the certificate, and I invest because I had run a private equity firm, and at Penn I ran their early stage investment. And now I invest in companies that I choose to invest in and work with. So it's been a really fun journey, and I love what I do.
It sounds like an impressive journey. Congratulations, Bobby. throughout that journey, there are different technologies that probably have come and gone. We were expecting probably that they were going to change everything, but maybe they didn't. And now everybody's talking about how AI and advanced analytics could change everything. So what is your view on that? You think we are, is AI going to change everything in the educational space, or are we over-promising? What is your view?
I don't know if we're over-promising, but we're certainly go through periods of hype. And I can give you examples of hype that have gone on to become just accepted. So for example, the biggest hype occurred when people thought we ought to put games into the classroom, and gaming was going to change everything about the way we learn. And I'm talking about many, many years ago, because I developed games. And what we found out was the games weren't ready to change everything. They didn't have evaluation built into them. How did you adjust for different levels of learning? Was the game teaching anything? And how did you know what it was teaching? And we still believe that games should be in the classroom. I do too. I'm just saying that it was a lot of hype about games, and teachers couldn't deal with them because they didn't know when to use them. They didn't have curriculum built around it. So at that time, I was hired by Maxis, which did SimCity, to develop their children's version of SimCity and to write a curriculum guide. So everybody got into gaming in a different way. So was that hype? Or was that something that just took some understanding? We had that happen again in the internet. I can't tell you how many courses were offered to teach people how to use search engines and use the internet. Nobody teaches anybody how to use the internet now anymore. It's just built in. So I believe with AI that it certainly is going to be impactful. By the way, I pulled out my doctoral dissertation and I wrote about AI, artificial intelligence, and what it would do to change the way people learn when I was working on my research. So that was a long, long time ago. So is it hype today because the technology finally caught up with making it usable in a way that's easy for people to use? I believe that's probably the case. Will it change everything? Clearly, it will change everything in the same way internet changed everything. but it's not a bigger change than some of the other large technology changes we have. It's a major change, and it will change significantly. We're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. But we won't see that hype in 2 years. It'll just be assumed that everybody's using it. The hype today is, one, our fear that we will be taken over by robots or the computer. I don't believe that, but I believe we will see change in the way we teach and the way we learn.
Bobby, we're going to come back to AI in a second, but is there any other technology that you're seeing that you believe, well, it's a little early for it to be a hype, but it's going to come, it's going to be here, and it's going to be part of that dramatic change? Is there anything that you're seeing at the end of the tunnel?
I think it's a combination of what AI is going to bring to the table. I'm seeing a lot of built-in technology that will change. Wearable, clothing, wearable, the foods in our electronic appliances, our refrigerator will tell you what to take out. It'll probably cook it for you. I probably won't be around then, but it'll probably cook it for you. But anyway, I do see lots of technologies being built in. And AI basically is a tool that's being built into applications. Nobody is going to go out and say, oh, I'm going to build an AI. They're going to build an application that uses AI. So AI is the same way that internet became embedded into what we do today. Nobody would not think of having a URL or a website or the technology that it brings to the table for anything you're doing today. I think that we'll also see the technology that I think is going to be most interesting to me is the ability to learn differently. Our brains are being remolded to learn in ways that we haven't. So virtual reality, visual learning, think a chips built, and I know this sounds really science fiction, but it's happening. Chips that are built in to help people hear, to help people see that they can. There was just a recent story out of the UK of a young child that had a chip implanted in her ear and can hear, couldn't hear before. So I think those are the technologies that will probably be most interesting. I'm seeing a merger of health technologies and learning technologies that's going to be fascinating. I'm now working with a group of from Johns Hopkins University, and they have created an incubator for wellness, mental health and wellness and health issues for women startups. So I'm seeing a much more of a blend of that. So that's exciting.
Interesting. And Bobby, with that vision that AI is going to be integrated in the short term, what are the challenges that you're seeing? And you can answer that either for the educational space or for K-12 and higher education separately, if you believe it's the challenges are different.
I think the biggest challenge is going to be that we don't have enough capacity of people to build these applications for us. We are all fighting over the same people. Our universities are ramping up AI and institutes and divisions and master's degrees and doctoral degrees. But today our capacity is quite low for people that understand how to write applications in using AI. I think that to me is the challenge that will continue. We had that challenge when we had the internet. Everybody complained we didn't have enough people to build out the internet. It will get there. I think this opens up a global solution because I don't think all of the capacity would come from just the United States. We don't have enough capacity. I think if you look clearly at what happened when we were building out internet solutions and we were building out other solutions, that other countries didn't catch up. So, for example, Japan used to be the leader in creating small electronics. It's no longer the leader. As a matter of fact, they're struggling with what to do and how to catch up there. So I think you're going to see a global solution to this, and the capacity to me is the biggest problem.
And Bobby, when we believe or that AI is going to be part of everything and it's eventually going to change everything, how far along are we talking about? You think we go into a classroom 2030, or is it 2030 very similar to where we are today? We need to go all the way to 2035. What is the span that you're seeing in front of us?
Well, I think it's very short. I think it's not the longer spans of 10 or 15 years. I think you're going to see major changes in the next 24 months, 2 to 5 years, because the technology is moving much faster than it is. If you look today, I mean, it's still at its very, very early stages, but nobody will walk into a venture capitalist and tell them that they don't use AI in their solution today. Whether they are or not is another question, but the bigger problem is I haven't seen, and that's where the breakthroughs will come in, I haven't seen any game-changing AI solutions. Everybody's using the same, you know, chatbots and the same technology, the ChatGPT or Google solution or some our OpenAI solution. So they're all using the same answer to solve their problem. So when you ask them how they're using it, they're all using it in very relatively innovative ways, but very small, because we're not quite there yet. We haven't had that breakout crazy solution that happened when we could put video on the internet, or when we could do, you know, we can now analyze video, or we can now do face recognition. It's all going to happen, and there's going to be some good and bad that happens with it. But every time you change something with technology, you get problems. As I told you earlier, I have 2 grandchildren. They're 7 and 4. And my daughter, who is quite tech savvy herself, is reading all these articles about the danger of screen time for your kids. The truth of the matter is, I don't think there's any danger directly from the screen. I think the danger is in what kids are looking at on the screen and what they're doing on the screen time. I think there's real value. I watched my 7-year-old grandson yesterday spend an hour programming Scratch at 7. I mean, I said, did you learn this in school? He said, no, I just figured it out. So I'm sure he learned something from school, but in general, he was doing this on his own. So I do think that we are going to constantly have that issue.
And is there anything that worries you in terms of the ethical misuse of this technology?
Yes, now you've hit my hot button. I think there's a lot of bias in the AI solutions today that are not being accounted for. So when you actually ask a question or put in information, it is absolutely biased against women. It's biased against diverse groups. And the reason for that has nothing to do that we've purposely, AI is a code. It's not personal. The reason is that the data we're putting in is biased. I mean, we don't have enough data in many areas representing diversity or women. So I am concerned. I'm concerned about the ethical use. I mean, you keep hearing the stories we're hearing now are kind of, you know, bothersome, but not dramatically terrible. But you're seeing people get their images used to present things. You're seeing people's voices now being replicated. How we control for that is probably something we can't control for completely, but we can help people be more cognizant of the way they use AI. And we have to, the same way when we were teaching kids to use search engines, we basically first built up a wall and said, oh, you can't put these search words in. And companies, I must have looked at a dozen, you know, business plans for companies that were going to block bad websites. And the problem is we ran into blocking things they needed. So children that the saddest example I know of is a child whose mother had breast cancer, and the system, and they wanted to use the internet to read more about it. The child couldn't get to that because the school had blocked the word breast. So those are things we have to worry about in AI. If we block too much, do we, you know, not have the power of the AI? Or do we control it? And I think you will see a lot of the same thing. What basically happened is all those companies went out of business, or practically went out of business. And the way we protected the internet was we gave a lot of education to kids in school about being careful of what you search for and making sure the resources are dependable. I think the same thing will happen with AI. I think we'll go overboard for a while, but I think we'll come back to moderation on it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're doing right on having these conversations now, and we miss maybe some of these conversations when social media was picking up. because we didn't control it. And we look back and we see that it was meant to connect people, but it actually had some harmful effects.
I don't think you throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I think we figure out, we let people know of the horrible effects, which we're doing more about social media. And even the people that have made a lot of money, like Facebook and Reddit and TikTok, are dealing with that as best they can. Clearly, they are in the business of making money and making their shareholders happy, but they're also in the business of making sure that they don't get killed by the public realizing that they're doing harm.
Yeah. And I don't want to get super technical, but something that you mentioned was that the algorithms are biased because our data is biased. No? And the traditional principle is to train with historical data, with the data that we have produced. But if the data is biased, the result is going to be biased. How could we change that? Is there any way? How could educational institutions kind of be more cognizant about, hey, we're going to train for this, but it's biased, or it's just about education and giving people a sense of, you know, it's a result, but we need to keep the human in the loop in case it is biased. What are your thoughts on this?
I think that we will be able to, I wouldn't say control is the wrong word, but we'll be able to adjust for it. And I think the people building these algorithms are really smart. And if we can build an algorithm that will replicate your voice or your face, we certainly can build algorithms that will adjust for the bias in the data. But more interesting to me is what's happening in people building their own AI databases. Those that are cognizant of this question and this issue have already adjusted their data to build it in. So I work with a woman that is building a mental health product for teachers to incorporate SEL, you know, social and emotional learning into their curriculum. And she's completely used a new database. She took an existing one, but she's put in all of the data and pulled from databases that aren't normally in the data and has created a database that I wouldn't say it's perfect, but is more attuned to addressing the issues related to bias. So that's happening all over in all fields, not just education. I mean, everybody's databases. We started with the existing databases. They were biased. Think about it. The data's biased. We know it's biased because when we look historically at the census each year in every 10 years, we can see the results that comes out just in determining who goes to Congress in the United States because of the way we collected data and the questions we asked. So now we should be adjusting for that. And for the census that'll come out in 2030, we will hopefully have better data than we did before. Will it be perfect? No. Will it be better? Yes.
Hopefully.
Hopefully yes. I think it will. I'm an optimist, and I'm also a believer that technology can do harm, but it's the benefits for it are more important than worrying about the harm it will do. We have to be aware of it, but not stop it because of that.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. Final question, Bobby, and this is the first time I'm going to ask this, but given your background as an EdTech investor, that you've seen thousands of business plans, and you're very sensitive about how technology is progressing and the capacity of institutions to adapt to change. So let's think for a second. You have unlimited resources and you need to invest in one particular technology or mechanism to push the world forward in educational terms. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that comes to mind that you would say, okay, we could have the biggest impact globally if we do this?
Oh, wow, that's a hard question. I think the big problems that we have to solve will certainly be helped to be solved by technology. I am sure of that. But without human intervention to think about those problems and decide which problems need the most attention first, we can't let AI decide what to solve. We have to let humans decide what to solve and then build the algorithms to do it. I think to me, the biggest problems in the world is learning to communicate. And I believe that AI and technology and the internet is a great tool for doing that. It's good and bad, but it's the best tool to have better communication globally. And so we need to build tools. I mean, the one thing that I think is very exciting about AI is the ability to simultaneously translate. So you could be translating this, and you can do it today. It's kind of clunky. You could be translating this simultaneously into Spanish so that what you'd have a recording that was both in Spanish and in English. So I think the communication to me is we will only solve problems if we learn to better communicate. I think the other one we have to be careful of, but also can help solve, is we have a lot of stress and mental health issues in the world today. And we do know that, I mean, I assume, maybe nobody else does, but I assume that we know that many of our leaders are not in a state to be leading right now in the world the way it is today. They didn't grow up with technology. They're unaware of it. They don't know how to use it. And therefore, even in the United States Congress, we probably have a ton of people that have never used their cell phone to send a text message, I'm sure of it. But anyway, I do think that we can also deal with the whole issue better of communication and the ability to find solutions collaboratively. I think the other large problem that we need to solve is how do you use the internet to help people build solutions that can compromise? The reason we have all the problems in the world today is because we only see one side of the story. And the leaders of these countries are not in touch with the people. They try to keep the internet out. They try to keep AI out. It's not going to happen. I mean, China is the best example of when they tried to block everything. All the people in China just went around it. Every single Chinese person I know, I'm not saying in the rural areas, but in the educated people I work with, have VPNs. They're not legal, but they have them. So,
interesting. I found really interesting that you mentioned one of the problems is compromise, because we only see one side of the version. And I think AI has contributed on this. I mean, even before we started talking about AI, when we're getting our news, no, the Google algorithm, it tries to be as relevant as it can for you. So if you start looking at news from the left, you're going to get more news from the left. And every time I switch between, let's give the US example, between CNN and Fox, it's like I'm looking at two different worlds, two different countries.
It's crazy. I'm clearly more left than right, but I have clearly go between Fox and CNN because I want to see if the story I'm hearing isn't biasing my opinion. And I'll turn on the Fox News just to hear what they're saying. Since we have no longer Trump as president, I've stopped being so news focused, but it was horrible during the Trump presidency.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you believe one way or the other, you got very biased news and you believed it. And I'm sure the people that report for Fox News are just as committed to the people that report for CNN and believe they're telling the story fairly. But there are two sides, and that's where compromise has to come in. And this is not only a U.S. problem. It's a problem all over the world issue. If you live in any democratic country or supposedly democratic country, you're getting biased news. If you live in a country that has one news outlet, then you're getting even more biased news.
Yeah, absolutely. But so we I think my outcome is we need to learn to live with bias and to be as educated as possible to really discern that everything is biased. So we cannot
education comes in. If we can't educate young people or adults, but particularly young people, to realize that they need to be discerning about what they look at and the way they evaluate data and information, then we're never going to solve the problem. I mean, I think I live in Washington, D.C., which is this little bubble of politics. If you go to the rural areas of the United States, the stuff that hits the front page of the paper in Washington, D.C. or on the news, the people in those areas, even educated people, don't even know. They're not even aware of some of the craziness. They probably can't even tell you where Gaza is in many cases. Yeah. So, or the Ukraine. And so I think it's a it's an education issue. It's not that the information isn't there. It's the way we teach people to get the information.
Absolutely, absolutely. Bobby, I cannot thank you enough. It's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed. Hopefully next time it's going to be with a real glass of wine instead of
an imaginary. Yes, exactly. Well, we'll be in virtual. December. We'll be there soon. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Bobby. Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.
Muchas gracias por habernos acompañado una vez más. De nuevo, cualquier pregunta que tengan sobre las discusiones, si quisieran que habláramos de algún tema en particular, alguna industria, algún caso de uso, déjenos saber. Nos encuentran en info@analyticus.com, también en las redes sociales, en Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Analyticus, con Y, con K y Latina. De nuevo, muchas gracias y hasta la próxima.
Simplifying Analytics, your one-stop podcast for data science, big data, descriptive, predictive, and cognitive analytics.